No, no, it goes.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't put both in advance. Well, we're supposed to. We don't know why we have no tapes at all. So, the spy.
And is it on?
I think so.
That's what it doesn't look like.
Have a look.
The light, I can't.
Yes,
really
the light is on. Yes.
Right. Those two things, please.
Yeah, that's on.
You have to press both of them, do you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's a simple
one. Should I have some more?
It's very good.
Would you like a cup of coffee afterwards?
I would love to.
Yes.
Not for me.
Not for you.
For my coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, I would like some, but.
Well, you have to have a cup of tea, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. No, no, maybe a herb tea. Yes, exactly. I'll have that, Patrick. And then we have one of Stefan's chocolates.
We have chocolate and biscuits.
Well, I hope
we shouldn't leave them too long because I think those don't work. Biscuits don't stay fresh too long unless they're pure butter.
Mm. Oh, they have to be eaten before they go rancid.
Stefan, you don't want to finish.
You
finish. No, someone's got to finish. Yes. Some more soy sauce. You flew from Brussels this morning, did you?
Yes, at noon. We had some delay because to Heathrow, yes. Because, I don't know what they said, ground traffic control was not working 100%. So we had about 20 minutes delay or something.
Is there now a service from Brussels to Gatwick?
I went to Heathrow, but I think there is now a service.
It's Dan Air flying
to Brussels
to Gatwick?
Mm-hmm.
Did you?
But it's more expensive now than flying to Heathrow. Not very much, but about 500 Belgian francs.
That's right. It's more expensive.
Yes.
Ready?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, Sarah.
What is it?
I don't know.
Come on, get one.
Napkins.
And so I flew into Heathrow, which is all right because it didn't take me very long. It takes about half an hour.
No, about more than that.
About 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
To Charing Cross from Heathrow,
mm.
and then another half an hour, which wasn't too bad.
Yes, the disadvantage is that you have to change at Green Park, don't you?
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, where are they?
Was the flight heavily booked?
Quite so. And what's amazing, and they really do, they have a flight be had as a flight at 12,
mm-hmm.
and at 12:55.
What is that?
55 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. Quite, yes, it was a 737, not very big, but it was quite full.
That's it. I was going to
give you. I think London must be one of the busiest routes.
Yes.
Just I must give you a bit different one. I think that's a different colour, so
okay.
You know which.
Thank you.
Patty and I are the same.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Remember what you have. You have the green.
Yeah.
So. But if you can make the coffee.
Yes, I will make some coffee.
And boil some water for me, please.
Yes.
Just for the tea sound.
News in 5 minutes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We have just time. Yet another cookery book. I've had lunch with some people and it was an absolutely fantastic chocolate tart. Absolutely wonderful. And I asked her to give me the recipe. I should have gone. And she said, oh, it's out of such and such a book. So I went to London last week and it was a Christmas cookery book. And a on television, and everywhere I was told around Christmas that it was sold out, and suddenly I saw in that shop three of those books, and I bought one, and that chocolate cake was in there. So I shall make it sometime.
Yeah, we should make it.
You have to make it. You have to find some nice chocolate, she said. Depends very much what
on
you
the
put
chocolate,
in it.
Yeah.
Yes, you have to take the very best.
Yeah.
Of course, she has made it twice, and once she said it was too sweet because she didn't know.
I should have. I thought of bringing some crémant from Cahiers back.
Is that very
That's
dry?
The best one.
Is that, yes,
well, to make chocolate mousse, it's the best one, mm-hmm. I know.
See,
it's fondant.
Would you agree
yeah.
that it
really... Well, you can't... it depends on the chocolate.
She said so. She made it twice, and she said once, the first time, it was much better because the chocolate was...
Yes.
She couldn't find the same chocolate, and...
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and
if you buy
a... less sweet or something.
A cheap kind of thing, it's not...
Mm-hmm.
It's not as good.
Yeah. No, she bought Cadbury, which isn't really special cheap.
Mm-hmm.
But she said there was a difference. So I shall make it once.
For my birthday at Christie's, we had Fortnum and Mason. No, what is the name? It wasn't Fortnum and Mason.
You had your birthday here.
Yeah.
We were here.
Mm-hmm. They had. They bought a wonderful chocolate cake.
Was it?
Yeah. Oh, what is the name of this pastry shop? Oh, I can't remember. It's on Piccadilly. It's not Richou. Not Richou.
Well, I'm sure Richou wouldn't be any good.
I don't know. I think Richou.
No, I don't know.
You know, I like the pastry. The thing you get at Richou is all right, but I hate the atmosphere of the surroundings.
Yeah,
I think it's so artificial.
Yeah. I even think
it's pseudo.
The food is
really?
Mm.
I think it's all right.
I remember once when some years ago I was alone in the evening and I had dinner there, you know, when I came over there. And they put me on a little table somewhere, you know, it's quite big, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's huge.
And it was empty. And they put me somewhere that always empty. Is it?
Well, I mean, there's 10 people or,
it
you know,
empty.
20.
Yes, yes.
Not.
And absolutely empty. And they put me right at the little, near the wall at the little...
Near the
table.
Kitchen. No.
Yeah. I don't know where it was, but anyway, in the back, near the wall, on the tiny little table for two. So I said, right, why should I sit there when the restaurant is empty? And I took everything and went right in the big round table, you know, and in the middle where I could breathe. And I've never been in that place anymore.
I don't like to do it.
First of all, it was empty, and then.
It's so pseudo, and then the.
Well,
I don't like
it. Never went again. And the Swiss Centre is closed for all that.
Yes,
for
a long time.
5 minutes. Will you take your coffee here or in the lounge?
In the lounge.
Well, I need a very big cup. Stefan, do you have
this
sugar?
This is fine.
Do you have sugar?
No, I'm just having some tea, which I'm not allowed to.
Did put some sugar? Yes. Oh, all right. Now let's have your cake.
This.
Kathy, are you changing the batteries after every tape? I think so. Well, I shall wait until the...
I think it's still fine. It's still...
It still seems to be responding, so... It still seems to be responding.
Has the fox passed by yet?
Yeah, it just came by about an hour ago.
Really?
It's still skinny.
Yes, it's very skinny. I would say we should have
something. Incredible, and quite dark.
Mm-hmm.
Its fur is quite black. Black yes. Spots and...
that in effect, those who are charged with enforcing do it in a way which will allow people to answer
like
the questions in a proper court of law.
The Army's rules for using lethal force have been in question many times before, but there's little controversy when armed terrorists are shot dead. As in the last incident like this, the shooting of Desmond Grew near Loch Bow.
No, if he does not in terrorism for 20 years.
And that was also the case when 8 IRA men were shot dead by soldiers in Loch Bow itself. All because the Army's rules say that soldiers can open fire without warning if by not doing so they'd increase the risk of death or injury to themselves or anyone else. The IRA also attacked an army base in Mali from Anna today, part of a greatly intensified campaign of one of eight terrorist incidents since Friday.
Water
bombs on a truck driven into a sawmill inside the base at an airfield appear to have exploded prematurely. No one was injured.
The IRA has admitted that a bomb which badly injured a Northern Ireland civil servant at her home near Belfast yesterday was a mistake. It said the woman who lost both her legs in the explosion had not been the intended target. The funerals of 3 UDR soldiers killed on Friday night were held today. At one of them, the Church of Ireland primate, Archbishop Robert Eames, urged the government to increase its efforts to defeat the evil of terrorism.
Unionist leaders joined hundreds of mourners for the first of today's funerals. The 3 soldiers who died were in the guard tower at the Glenanne base. The £2,000 bomb loaded onto a lorry was the largest the IRA has ever exploded. Today, the Church of Ireland primate Archbishop Robin Eames called the bombing dastardly and evil. It brought searching questions, he said, for politicians and the community.
Have those with the responsibility of government really faced up to what is happening in this community? To those given the trust of others as politicians, are they doing all they can to see a way forward?
Private Paul Blakely had saved a soldier's life during an earlier terrorist attack. He and Corporal Robert Crozier and Private Sidney Hamilton all lived in the Armagh area. The IRA bombing at Glenanne has left 13 people injured, 3 widows and 9 children fatherless.
The talks which are meant to bring about political progress in Northern Ireland began 5 weeks ago. They run into a number of difficulties, but tonight at Stormont, the Northern Ireland Secretary Peter Brook said they would not be affected by the violence.
I think one of the profoundly encouraging things has been the universal view of all politicians engaged in this process, that if the intent of the terrorists was to blow us off course in this process, that they have been singularly unsuccessful, and that the politicians are determined to carry on.
Joining me now from Stormont is our Ireland correspondent, Dennis Murray. Dennis, Mr. Brook says they won't be blown off course. Is it possible even that they might be pushed forward by all this violence?
Well, certainly it might serve to concentrate the politicians' minds. Ian Paisley was at those UDR funerals today, and one of the things he said was that even if one of the members of his delegation was attacked and killed by the IRA, he would be there till the talks process had run its course. So I think, if anything, it will have that effect. Of course, it does change the context, rather, in which the politicians will be talking. And I think that when you do have politicians disagreeing slightly about terrorism outside the talks, then there might be just a very slight knock-on effect. But at the same time, I think you could look to see the politicians keeping to go forward with the process.
And how are they going forward at the moment? They've yet to find the independent chairman.
They have, and that is the largest outstanding problem. But once they've cracked that, they can go more or less into the full roundtable discussions, because Peter Brook also said tonight that they had agreed the agenda for that part of the talks. So while it is a major problem, I still think it will take some days to sort that out. Once they have it sorted out, then they can get round the table together.
But some say you'll get nowhere with a political attempt until you solve the security.
You help yourself to...
I think the
milk and sugar.
They keep saying that these are not peace talks, it's not a peace process. And in fact, I think they're quite worried that there would be an upsurge in IRA violence if they did reach
agreement.
They're trying to isolate the people who support terrorism, isolate the gunmen, and erode the basis of support for terrorism, because they can show that all the other people in Ireland will agree. And that's what the politicians are trying to do, and are dedicated to
it. So it's a mistake to think of these talks as peace talks.
Yes, very much so. There will not be an end to violence if the politicians do agree. I think you might well see an erosion of violence if the IRA will fear political progress. Because it's very difficult to justify going on killing people when everybody else in Ireland has agreed on a new form of government for Northern Ireland?
Dennis Murray and Stormont, thank you very much.
Patrick Olsen.
Three alleged IRA terrorists who were acquitted in April of murdering two Australian tourists have been put on trial again in Holland on the same charges. They're Donna Maguire, Paul Hughes and Sean Hick. A fourth accused, Gerard Hart, was found guilty of murder at the same trial. The two Australians were shot dead in mistake for British services. Arriving at Sevenoaks Court in a police convoy, the alleged IRA terrorists began their terror trials in April.
Because the ones who were caught in Belgium, on the Belgian Dutch border,
the Australian tourists in Roermond. Extensive security measures were enforced for what the authorities know is a controversial case. Under Dutch law, people can be tried again for the same offence, even if there's no fresh evidence. In Dutch courts, it happens frequently, especially if the prosecution feels key points have been misinterpreted. As the trial started, the defence lawyers said they thought their clients were making legal history, the first suspected IRA terrorist to face trial twice for the same crime. Sitting with their backs to the public gallery, Sean Hick, Paul Hughes and Donna Maguire told the judges they didn't want their faces to be sketched by court artists. The public prosecutor, Fritz van Stralen, said the three were once more accused of murder, conspiracy and membership of an illegal organisation. He said they shouldn't have been acquitted before, telling the judges that the murders were a classic example of the crimes committed by the IRA. Also in court was Gerard Hart, the only one found guilty of the original Roermond crime. He's appealing against the 18-year sentence for murder he received then, arguing that he wasn't even in the town at the time of the attack. His case only adds to the complexity of today's
hearing. Nice book. Have you seen that?
The murder of the two Australian lawyers in Roermond last summer was described at the time by the IRA as a tragic error. The men mistaken for off-duty British soldiers.
Don't
do that. Doesn't
stand alone
anymore.
It's
like one mistreat trial
is supposed
to
rescue.
The Home Secretary, Mr. Baker, has abandoned the plans for the mass destruction of American fictional terrorism. Instead, he wants to make it so expensive to keep them, several hundreds of pounds, that many owners will decide to have their dogs put down.
It is to be an offence to own a dog that's been bred to fight. The government says that's beyond any doubt. It's the question of exemptions to the new law that's come to the fore. The Home Secretary's words a fortnight ago have, say his colleagues, been misinterpreted.
This will inevitably lead to a lot when you talk to
down.
But I must ask you to remember how vicious and deadly these dogs can be.
You can really taste
the numbers of fighting dogs will now be reduced significantly, says one source, by making it difficult and expensive to own them. The cost could amount to several hundreds of pounds by the time owners have paid around £120 to have the dog neutered and obtained a certificate to that effect from the vet, not to mention buying a muzzle and making the home and
staff secure. Oh,
Patrick,
that's a really good idea.
The
to ask
the
all these.
The owner will also have to pay to have the dog registered.
We will see an end to these fighting dogs.
Patrick,
which,
this is a good deterrent. You don't have to kill them, do you? Make all these things.
Well, I don't know. I think people are really off. I mean, if I was fond of my pit bull, I wouldn't kill them.
Yeah, but, I mean, they were going to destroy all these. It's much easier to demand all these points. No, without being brutal, and it's all
well, I don't know if it will help.
Labour says that the Home Secretary has been forced to climb down. In their view, his initial response was unwise.
No, this is much better.
The Home Secretary spoke first and started to think afterwards. And what he proposed about a fortnight ago, putting down 10,000 pit bull terriers, was never on.
One ministerial source said this evening that many owners of fighting dogs would, in his view, opt for some £25 compensation and lose the dog, rather than spend hundreds of pounds trying to satisfy the government's conditions. Ministers believe that the new measures are so tough that few fighting dogs will ultimately remain.
Really?
Prince William is in Great Ormond Street Hospital this evening following an accident at his prep school. Princess of Wales is at his bedside. Prince Charles left the hospital earlier this evening. Prince William, who's second in line to the throne, was hit on the head by a golf club while he was playing during his lunch break.
The ambulance carrying the injured prince arrived at Great Ormond Street Hospital earlier this evening. The Princess of Wales was by her son's side for the journey from the Royal Berkshire Hospital in Reading, where he was first treated. His father, Prince Charles, travelled just behind in his own car. Doctors were waiting to examine Prince William, who'd received head injuries earlier in the afternoon. Buckingham Palace said the 8-year-old prince was hurt during a supervised play period at the Ludgrove Preparatory School near Wokingham. He's been a pupil there since last September. He was hit on the side of the head by a golf club while playing with friends on the school's putting green at lunchtime. He was taken to the Royal Berkshire Hospital, which is 6 miles away, and was treated in the casualty department. Staff there put special contingency plans into action, measures prepared after the prince started going to the nearby school. It was found his cut didn't need stitches, and he was transferred to Great Ormond Street in London. A short time ago, the Prince of Wales left, and it seems likely that his son will now spend the night in hospital.
The Prime Minister has denied that the government is losing its nerve in the face of some bad opinion. He was speaking after a meeting of senior executives from the public sector and private industry, which discussed the citizen's charter for better public services. The Major said the government is developing policy initiatives.
John Major returned to Downing Street with opinion polls confirming Labour's lead and with his party chairman warning colleagues, keep your nerve. So was the Prime Minister losing his?
Well, I'm certainly not, and I think you will find that nobody in the government is, and nobody in the Conservative Party
is. Like a badger
you will find, as you have seen over the last few days, there are a lot of policy proposals to come forward. You will find they are very innovative, and I think people will find them attractive.
The Prime Minister insisted that his citizens' charter, which would form part of the Conservative election manifesto, was proof of a government exploring new ideas. But the question remains. Was John Major capable of leading from the front?
How is a government led from the front? It's led from the front by forming policy. What have we been doing this morning? Forming policy. Why have we been forming to improve public services? And for whom are we improving the public services? The public. That seems to me to be precisely and absolutely the job of government.
In the fight for the political initiative, Labour this morning outlined sweeping reforms for improving health standards. A day before, the government outlined its own blueprints. Labour called for a ban on tobacco advertising, random breath tests for drivers, and clearer food labelling.
Everybody can invent targets for cutting the fees, but targets won't hit themselves. The challenge is what action will government take to achieve those targets.
This afternoon, the Labour leader insisted that the government's attitude towards a single European currency was more about holding his party together than enhancing British interests in Europe. But it's the economy that's central to the case against the government.
Mr. Major is playing for time in the hope that he can save the Conservative Party.
Stefan sold the very
Stefan
noticed the and he liked it very much.
The more damage results.
John Major still wasn't giving the Tory party and the government a sense of direction. All of the initiatives are about asking the public to forget the last 4 years.
The Prime Minister readily acknowledges that falling inflation alone won't be enough to reverse public opinion, not while unemployment goes on rising significantly. But beyond that, Mr. Major has to prove that he has new ideas and leadership skills that can inspire confidence among his own MPs as well as the voters at large. He has much to do, even if he waits until next year before calling for general election.
The Soviet prosecutor has said the use of troops to break up demonstrations in Lithuania last January was justified. 13 people were killed, and hundreds were injured. But in a report, the prosecutor said none of the deaths could be blamed on the Lithuanians. There was some delay with the Lithuanian leadership.
Can I pour you another cup of coffee?
Around in groups.
I didn't come into any available solutions.
The reports should certainly have come at a worse time for President Gorbachev, just as the prospects of economic help from the West were looking up. Its findings are unlikely to impress Western analysts. Its publication is an uncomfortable reminder of the continuing tension between the Kremlin and the Baltic Republic.
President Gorbachev chaired another meeting of the committee discussing his new Union Treaty today. The Baltic states are boycotting the proceedings. This report could prove to be a setback in his efforts to convince the West that his program of reform is continuing. Carol Walker, BBC News, Moscow.
It's expected that President Gorbachev will be invited to London next month at the same time as the summit meeting of the seven leading industrial nations. At a meeting of European Community foreign ministers in Germany, the British Foreign Secretary, Douglas Hurd, said that although no final decision had been taken, he did expect Mr. Gorbachev to attend.
The agenda here was crowded with issues, and an invitation to Mr. Gorbachev to attend the summit of the seven industrialized democracies was not one of them. But four members of this group are members of that one, and pressure is growing almost by the day for an invitation to Moscow.
What we're doing as chairman, what John Major is doing, is collecting voices, seeing what the general view is. There isn't yet a unanimous view about it, and when there is, we'll act on it.
Is the view moving towards it coming?
Well, I think it probably is, in the sense that most of those concerned seem to be favouring it. But that leaves a lot of questions unanswered about when and in what circumstances. Discuss what. So there's a good deal of work to be done on it, Chair.
The setting here was right for an opening to the east. The ministers met on the banks of the Elbe, where barges ply upstream to Czechoslovakia. Last night they looked out over the so-called Switzerland of Saxony, close to the Czech and Polish borders. The case was made for community aid in Brussels. The West Germans bail out the east.
But only Europe can bail out Poland, Czechoslovakia, and Hungary, and not to speak from the Soviet Union.
As it happened, the other main formal business here, the Treaty on Political Union, was the one that showed least progress. The drafters were told to go back and try again, and it wasn't even the British who had to tell them.
There's mainly an argument between the French and the Commission, but I supported the French idea, which is that you can discuss under the general guidance of the European summits. You can discuss and work together as Europeans, not necessarily always within the Treaty of Rome.
But the principal message of Britain was in the symbolism. Western Europe is in business to help the East. Martin Bell, BBC News, President.
An American man wanted for questioning in connection with the murder of the British student Catherine Ailey has appeared in court in his hometown of Pakistan. Curtis Howard is attempting to obtain a false passport. He was detained in custody of
BI publications.
The Australian Prime Minister Bob Hawke has survived a challenge to his leadership of the country's Labour Party. His challenger, the Finance Minister Paul Keating, has resigned. Mr. Hawke won by 66 votes to 44. Mr. Hawke, who's led his party to four consecutive general election victories, has cancelled the European tour, which was due to start this week. Labour's Trade and Industry spokesman Gordon Brown has called for the Monopolies Commission to investigate allegations that high street banks are protecting their profits at the expense of small businesses. It's claimed that the banks are not passing on interest rate cuts to small firms. Chancellor Norman Lamont has already said he'll be meeting the banks to discuss the matter.
As recession has gathered pace, the level of complaint from small businessmen against the banks has reached a pitch the government can no longer ignore. Allegations that banks are failing to pass on lower interest rates come from businessmen like David Simpson. He arranged an overdraft for his consultancy business 4 years ago. In April, when the lending rates set by the Bank of England had been falling for months, the National Westminster wrote to inform him that the interest charge on his loan was being increased from 5 to 6.5% above the base rate.
We've seen the Chancellor bring the interest rates down by a series of half-point moves over the last 6 to 7 months. And then the bank says, well, we're going to put them up because we need bigger margins. Now, this is actually running counter to what the country needs.
Small business organisations say David Simpson's experience has been repeated in different companies and with different banks throughout Britain, while the Labour Party wants the matter referred to the Monopolies and Mergers Commission.
What is needed is a clear public examination
of what banks are charging. They should, if necessary, be brought before the trade and industry committee of the House of Commons.
Banks are in a bad
They're all sued.
Profits are down too.
They charge the exorbitant interest rates at a time when base rates are coming down. In essence, there is profiteering being made by banks on the backs of small businesses.
Inquiries among the big four banks today demonstrate how much more small businesses have to pay for their credit. The banks say it's a reflection of the extra risk and additional work involved in lending to small companies. Whereas major multinational firms can negotiate loans at around 1.5% above the base rate, middle-ranking UK-based companies average around 2% above base. But small businesses pay an average of 3.5%, rising to 6.5% above base rates or more. And it's among these companies that some lending rates have been increased.
We also have a business to manage, and I suggest that it's to the mutual benefit of the banks and the small business community to impose these relatively modest increases in order to sustain our ability to lend.
The Chancellor clearly wants some fast answers to industry complaints, not least because his intention in lowering base rates is precisely to ease the pain on industry and not to swell the profits of the high street banks.
The funeral of the Labour MP Eric Heffer has taken place in Liverpool. The service was held in Walton Parish Church in the constituency Mr Heffer had represented for 27 years. Labour MPs, including Mr. Heffer's close colleague Tony Benn, were among the mourners. Senior United Nations officials in Ethiopia have appealed to all parties in the country to give safe passage to famine relief workers. They say staff have been killed, vehicles stolen, and warehouses looted. Ethiopia's new leader, Meles Zenawi, says the old regime has left the country bankrupt.
The people of Ethiopia are flocking to their churches to pray for peace, that there might at last be an end to 3 decades of civil war. Half the population are Coptic Christians of the Ethiopian Orthodox Church. Most of the rest are Muslims. Religion is important here, where the lives of so many hang by a thread. 17 years of President Mengistu's Marxism have not changed that. Neither will Ethiopia's new rulers, whatever political complexion they turn out to be. It was peaceful enough for the old regime today. 280 of the ministers, generals and senior officials under Mengistu are being held in the grounds of the Addis Political School. Most gave themselves up and now spend their days in its rather pleasant grounds.
Your circumstances have changed, brother. Oh, indeed, it's changed actually. Like in England, for example, on Great Britain, when her mother left, Thatcher was changed and John Major had to become the Prime Minister because of the party crisis. So you expect actually change to go on everywhere.
Mrs. Thatcher isn't under arrest, and you are.
Well, circumstances might change. It could be for security.
I think that's a very nice comparison.
What did he say?
He compared the way Mengistu was put out of power to how Thatcher left government.
The new regime has promised no reprisals, no concessions, no kangaroo courts. If they keep that promise, it would not just be unusual for Africa, it would be unique. The new leader, Meles Zenawi, warned people to be on their guard against agents of the old regime. He went on Ethiopian television to say the country had been bankrupted in economic and human terms. He had no magic solutions, he said. Still, the feeding camps in the capital reopened this morning after the fighting. This is a special one for twins. Twin births are twice as common here as elsewhere. But almost half of them die in this country where feeding one baby often proves impossible. 430 pairs of twins get food and medical help here. Their mothers can earn money by working and selling what they produce. In this case, pounding out cardamom and other spices for sale here and abroad. Children of the Gemini Trust are safe in the camps of the East, where anarchy and famine rule, they're not. Michael Burke, BBC News, Addis Ababa.
Tonight's main news again. The IRA has admitted that the three men who were shot dead by the army in Northern Ireland this morning were members of its organisation. There'll be more on Newsnight on BBC Two at 10:30, but that's the 9 o'clock news tonight. Good night.
The next is the new chief of any merchant. on Radio 4 in the morning.
Probably breakfast television. I like it very much. From Newsroom Southeast, the main stories this evening. A bogus doctor who examined pregnant women at a London clinic has been jailed for 33 months. Rakesh from Warrington in Surrey admitted at the Old Bailey that he examined 13 women and authorised abortions for 7 of them. Sood, who had no medical qualifications, also set up slimming clinics in Thornton Heath, Bromley and Sutton. Families on income support in the South East are regularly going hungry because of a lack of money, according to a leading charity today. The National Children's Home Survey found 1 in 5 parents and 1 in 10 children under 5 had gone without food in the previous month because of a lack of money.
Terrible statistics. What about 9 in 10 who are all right?
Very often happen to have breakfast, especially on a Monday morning. We often find that they come in, they tell us that they haven't eaten over the weekend.
A woman who ran an old people's home in Kent has been struck off the nursing register. A tribunal heard how she abused residents and forced them to live in squalid conditions. Old people at Caroline Nursing Home in Faversham were denied medical treatment and left hungry and cold. David Potterton, who left Caroline in 1986, was found guilty of 27 charges of misconduct. 130 jobs are to go at Babbleton Council in Essex, and charges are to be increased for all council services. The Labour-run council, which was charge-capped by the government, needs to save more than £5 million. But the Towngate Theatre has been saved from closure. Train services between Canterbury and Dover are still suspended tonight while repairs continue on a ruptured gas main. It happened during roadworks by a railway bridge in the village of Adisham near Canterbury earlier today. Don't forget, you can listen to news and travel throughout the day on your local radio station. But that's all for news and studies for now. Here's the weather forecast with John Ketley.
Good evening. Well, some welcome rain for many gardens today, but some unwelcome temperatures with the winds in the north. And a cool and showery day is going to be again tomorrow, with the high pressure staying over there in Iceland and low pressure developing over southern parts of Scandinavia. Well, you can see on the radar pictures today how the showers got going during the course of the day. Not too many around this morning. But then during the afternoon, a real cluster of showers developing over central and eastern parts of Britain in particular. Some hail, some thunder, a bit of sleet and snow up on northern mountains as well. Well, the latest radar picture shows most of the showers moving out to the southeast of England there. But they'll keep going around the coast tonight because sea temperatures are just what you need for showers to keep going, particularly across the north of Scotland and anywhere down the eastern coast of both Scotland and England. A fair number of showers to come yet. Fairly clear inland though, that means to say it's going to be a very chilly night for this time of the year. There could be a ground frost virtually anywhere. There could even be an air frost over the northern half of Britain. Well, tomorrow these two areas of high pressure linking arms, really. That means to say the showers will be suppressed in the west, but most of the showers again over central and eastern parts of the country. Well, for many inland parts tomorrow, it's going to start off nice and bright. In fact, there's plenty of sunshine for several hours, as indeed there were today. About 14.6 hours of sunshine.
Can I top up your coffee?
But plenty of sunshine to come once again. But the shower clouds building up during the course of the morning, and just like today, by the afternoon, a lot of showers developing, some hail and some thunder once more, and again some sleet and snow, mainly above about 1,500 feet over the northern half of the British Isles. Not too many showers down here in the southwest, but what you will find later in the day is the cloud increasing, and there'll be outbreaks of rain turning up in the far southwest of England by about this time tomorrow, I would imagine. Well, temperatures tomorrow about the same as they were today, but I think you're going to find that there'll be less wind, generally speaking, particularly in the west. So 15, 59 Fahrenheit, if you are up to the wind, probably won't feel too bad, but certainly very chilly up there in the northeast. It's Derby Day on Wednesday. I think we are going to see
Derby Day. Very good weather.
Later in the afternoon. That rain pushing north to
tomorrow.
No, Wednesday.
We should get
Can you go in like this? No problem.
Oh, yes, next to me is a walker event. There'll be fun fairs.
We always humbly scum the water every week, simply because we haven't thought of it as a valuable
I don't think so.
We all thought we had
that's
plenty to go round,
have to
but in
reality,
we
all know
we have
to
pay the price.
But if you
are
invited to the religion, then you have to drink.
In 40 minutes here on one, you can see football highlights from England's first match against New Zealand in Sport Tonight Special. First on BBC One, Panorama, with Gavin Hewitt.
Don't go to
Webster if you should be studying.
2 years after the tax crush, the democracy movement here in Tiananmen Square, Panorama has returned to China unofficially. We report on the fate of the protesters in the square. For the first time, those who stayed in China speak out about the political terror that followed the massacre and what remains of the democracy movement today.
Everybody does.
But on the day of the exam, she usually didn't study.
Mm-hmm.
So,
no, she never studied.
If Stefan wants to go to Epsom,
mm-hmm.
Can I have the first part of the newspaper?
Yes, indeed, that's it. Yeah.
Thank you.
You should really.
I think it's the person who was accused of murdering the young student from the north of England.
I thought you couldn't show photographs of people who are accused. Patrick.
Well, this has been obtained through America, from Boston. Depends. In America, you can.
Yeah, but this is a photo here.
No, it's taken in Boston.
Yes, but published here, the photo.
Oh, well, perhaps that's all right.
Well,
Kathy, you have to go and ask your lawyers. I don't know. You have to go and ask your lawyers.
I haven't any lawyers.
No, well, I'm sure the Times has got it right.
It's a bit funny, Patrick. Why can you... He's accused. He's not yet guilty.
No, in fact, he's not. He's being arrested for some other crime. He's being arrested by the Americans for obtaining a false passport. Not for murder.
Yeah, and we have him for murder, and we have...
No. I think you have to look at it very, very carefully. Mm-hmm. He's not being arrested.
No, it's just because they're questioning him.
Yeah, but usually you don't show...